Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
Crazy Old Man in the Attic, episode 50. Wilbon, we begin today with sad news, the passing of Don Shula this morning at 90 years old at his home in Indian Creek in Florida, the winningest NFL coach of all time, probably most famous for the undefeated Dolphins 1972, the only perfect team, 17-0. I know that you're very fond of Don Shula, so I wondered what you thought about his life and his career.
Tony, when I heard this, it was just sort of devastating to me. I guess I'm of a certain age where that might happen sort of naturally just following football. But then when I covered the NFL for the Washington Post, that was sort of the end part of Don Shula's extraordinary run. And I was just sort of fascinated, in awe of him, in awe of what he was able to do as a coach in terms of, think about this. He started his career with a quarterback named John Unitas. He goes to Greasy and Morrill and then Dan Marino. And think of how different those each one of those men was as an athlete and temperament. And Shula didn't say, well, I got to redo my thing. I'm threatened by that. I don't want to redo my system. He didn't do any of that. He said, okay, I'm going to figure out how to best use the talents of this particular man at this particular time. And how different could you get? The Greasy teams, where Bob Greasy would sometimes throw the ball as few as 12 times a game, and Dan Marino putting it up there 40 times a game. And this is the same man over a period of whatever, 33 years. I was just in awe of him as a coach and a man.
So I'm not going to let that point go for a second, because this is a man who coached in Baltimore. He had Johnny Unitas. And in Miami, he had Dan Marino. And this is not unlike Phil Jackson having Michael Jordan in Chicago and having Kobe Bryant in Los Angeles. These are all-time great quarterbacks. I'm going to do a couple of statistics here because I think they're meaningful. He was a head coach for 33 years, 7 with the Baltimore Colts and 26 with the Dolphins, and that's a long time. He had 328 regular season wins and 347 if you count the playoffs. Mike, that's an average of a little over 10 a year. And when he started, they were playing, I think, 12 games a year. And then they went to 14, and then they went to 16. It's a remarkable amount of wins. He had two losing seasons. He had two in 33 years. Two losing seasons. I mean, the length and breadth of his career is stunning. He did other things as well. He was involved with a golf course. He was involved with restaurants. I always found him to be a very affable guy. I found him sort of like Arnold Palmer. I know people said he was gruff. I never found him gruff. You never did you?
Well, no, and Tony, he might have been that way when he was younger before I ever got around him. But he was so tough. His players always talked about how tough he was, yet there was a different gear. And he was certainly, Tony, a charismatic man, I thought. And so, yeah, I mean, there's sides to him. But when you look at the record, the numbers that you mentioned, the 300-plus wins, and there are only three guys with that, Halas and Belichick behind Shula. It's just, the whole thing is extraordinary.
I'm just going to say this one thing about him. He's on my Mount Rushmore. I got Shula. I got Lombardi. I got Bill Walsh. And I've got Belichick. I assume he's on everybody's Mount Rushmore as an NFL football coach. And you know what? He looked more like an NFL football coach than anybody.
I would agree with you about that Mount Rushmore, Tony. I mean, Shula's on it. I don't care who you are, where you're from, what your rooting interests were. If it's going to be credible, then Don Shula has to be on it. Tony, we're going to transition to another football story. Over the weekend, Andy Dalton signed a one-year deal with the Dallas Cowboys for $3 million. Reportedly, the Cowboys say this deal does not impact how they feel about Dak Prescott. Tone, should Dak feel threatened by this move?
Okay, I don't think that the Cowboys went out there to try to threaten Dak Prescott. I don't think this is aimed at Dak Prescott. I think they thought they could pick up the best backup quarterback in the NFL in Andy Dalton. But should he feel threatened? Yes, he should feel threatened, because Andy Dalton took Cincinnati to the playoffs 4 times. Cincinnati's a bad franchise. Dallas is a good franchise. Dallas has paying a lot of money for a great wide receiver, a lot of money for a great running back. They can't have a nondescript backup. But if something happens to Dak Prescott, Andy Dalton has the capability of going in there and being a big-time player. Yeah.
Yeah, Tony, I don't know Dak Prescott well enough to know whether he does feel threatened by this. But let's face it, the Cowboys can't come to the deal that Prescott really wants or that they really want, the long-term deal. And you've got to go out and get insurance. I mean, forget the contractual status. The NFL these days, unless you've got Brady or Breeze, you need two guys. Even Aaron Rodgers gets hurt every now and then and has to be out for a while. You need a, like you said, a credible backup quarterback to make that thing go, given the other investments they've made at wide receiver and running back. So it may not have been aimed at Prescott, but it seems like it's a pretty shrewd and sound move given today's NFL. And so, you know, Prescott may be sitting there thinking, this has nothing to do with me. My team and I will go about getting the deal we want. And maybe that'll be the case, but nice insurance policy signing by the Dallas Cowboys.
By the way, Breeze got hurt last year, right? Teddy Bridgewater came in
five games. Right.
I
mean, that's right.
Everybody gets hurt. This makes sense for Andy Dalton. He lives in Dallas. He went to TCU. Who knows if there's going to be a season? This basically gives him a year at home. Prescott is very durable and dependable. 64 straight starts.
Played every game.
I just think what happened, Mike, is I think that he had a lot more leverage yesterday than he does today. I think this cuts into his leverage a little bit. And for people that don't know the great editor of the Washington Post, Benjamin Bradley, he would have called this creative tension.
Creative tension.
That's what
yes,
this is.
Absolutely.
A little bit of creative tension. I got a story for you in the NBA, all right? Sean Marks, the general manager of the Nets, is a native New Zealander. He was asked by a New Zealand paper if Kevin Durant might return to the Nets if, you know, they finish the season and go to the playoffs. And Marks said, let me get this quote right. That's a $110 million question. We're never going to push him to get back, but I'll tell you this. Before the pandemic, he looked like Kevin Durant, unquote. I'll ask you, Wilbon, should the Nets push Kevin Durant to come back?
No, they shouldn't. They shouldn't push him to come back. And the only way I'd let him come back, I mean, he'd have to wow me in such a way. And he'd have to insist. He'd have to be at my door knocking on it, saying, put me in, coach, I'm ready to play. I wouldn't do it, Tony. The New York Nets, I know you wish they were. That's going back to your days on Long Island. Tony, the Brooklyn Nets are not going to win anything this year, even if they come back with a shortened playoff format, even if they come back 3 out of 5 all the way. They're not winning now. And so you got this big investment in Kevin Durant. Just give him till whenever they come back. Real. He could go through a normal camp that's pushed 2 months later, perhaps, a season that starts in December. I mean, all these things would work in favor of him having suffered that injury. So given the risk and the possible reward, there ain't that much reward because the Nets ain't winning now. I would almost force him to wait.
All right, I'm going to go the other way on this one. I'm not going to say they should push him. I'm going to say they should ask him. They've got in payroll, $300 million between him and Kyrie Irving. If they start the playoffs right now, the Nets are 7th, which means I think they would play Toronto. I think if Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant are ready to play, I think they can win the East. I don't know about Kyrie Irving. These are unhappy people. These are moody people. These are temperamental people. But if you tell me, Mike, that both of them can play, not just one, because with just one, even Durant, they're not going to win. You're right. But if both of them can play, I'm going to ask that question. If they say no, I'm going to live with it. But I'm going to ask that question, because if we push to August or September, that's almost like next season.
I know, Tony, but he'd have to initiate it for me. Kevin Durant and his people would have to initiate it and then insist and insist and insist some more. I'm just going to say this as much as I love Kevin Durant as a player. Tony, I don't see Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving making the Nets a threat next season. I just don't. This injury is too hard to come back from, and Kyrie's injured all the time. It's too hard to come back from. I don't see them being a serious threat in the East, bigger than healthy Toronto. I don't know when Philly is going to get themselves together or if they will, or Milwaukee. So I don't particularly, Boston, I don't particularly see that. He'd have to knock down my door if I'm Sean Marks before I say yes. That's just me. Tony, this next story comes from the moon. A former Expos groundskeeper tells the Montreal Gazette that Pete Rose, yes, regularly had his back corked, bats, I'm talking about plural, corked, while playing for the Expos in 1984. The groundskeeper quotes another Expos employee as saying Rose corked his bats for 20 years and nobody checked them because he was a singles hitter. Tone, seriously now, would you look at Pete Rose's career any differently if you found out there was truth in this, that he corked his bats?
Okay, so I think Pete Rose did more damage to himself maybe than any player ever when he bet on games as a manager. To me, that is worse than steroids. That is worse than banging on a garbage can, because what it means is if you're not betting that day, you don't really have to care about winning. I would still put Pete Rose in the Hall of Fame, and now I would just add another line of type so that the plaque would be the longest in all of Cooperstown with all of Pete Rose's misdeeds. And the other thing that I would say about this, because I know you're going to say this, is that corking a bat, if you do it stupidly like Sammy Sosa and explodes all over the infield, that's different. But if you cork your bat, that's sort of within the parameters of acceptable cheating. We can catch you at that, you know, and then you won't do that again. To me, I mean, all those hits, what's the number here? 4,257 or something? No, that was Ty Cobb. No, it's like 4,256. Corking a bat doesn't get you all those hits. It just doesn't. He was one of the greatest hitters of all time. So,
but he was. But you know what, Tony? For me, it's not just the corking of the bats. It's the tipping point. How far can you go with Pete Rose? I mean, seriously, if this is true, corking is, first of all, the one thing I find it difficult to believe, one reason, is because this can't stay a secret for 20 years. We know clubhouses. You know how they operate. These guys are not just going to stay silent, whoever helped him cork his bats. This is 40 years later, Tony. I just have a hard time seeing it.
You don't believe it, because the guy who allegedly corked the bat, this was his comment, I'm not at liberty to discuss it. That doesn't sound like a big-time denial to me. I'm not at liberty to discuss it.
But if it was true, as I ask you, if it could be the tipping point, because it does help you.
Right.
Because balls that might be flagged down and backhanded by a first baseman is through the gap between first and second, and that's another hit for Pete Rose. It's just unthinkable. Pete Rose stories at this point, Tony, I just started laughing when I heard this.
Okay, I mean, Charlie Hustle, right? He's the prototype ball player, take every advantage he possibly could. I don't disbelieve it. I guess you do.
I'm just saying I'm a little skeptical. As we throw it back to Sage and Kevin, we'll see if they're skeptical.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So at GEICO, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now it's our turn to share with the GEICO Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
It could be a routine drive to pick up the kids after school or an epic road trip across the country. No matter where your travels take you, we know those miles count. We're Marathon. We have over 5,700 stations across our great nation. Our people are working hard every day to provide you with quality top-tier gasoline to improve engine performance and fuel your life. Marathon, fueling the American spirit.
Get the glasses. Let's get the legal pad for the happies. Happy 31st birthday, Rory McIlroy. On the verge of getting sneaky old. McIlroy is the number one ranked golfer in the world, the reigning PGA Tour Player of the Year, and for my money, the conscience of the sport. He declined to play in that proposed new limited field, huge money golf tour that would siphon off the best players from the PGA and European tours, saying the tours that exist now are just fine, thank you. McIlroy has won 4 majors, missing only the Masters for the career slam. He won the U.S. Open at Congressional in 2011. He's got 2 PGA titles and a British. His best finish at the Masters was 4th in 2015, and it is not hard to remember him hitting it so far left off the tee at Augusta in 2011 that the ball almost landed in South Carolina. Just this week, McIlroy hit balls for the first time in nearly 2 months. McIlroy, Ricky Fowler, Dustin Johnson, and Matthew Wolff will carry their own bags and play for charity at Seminole Golf Club in Florida on Saturday, May 17th in a match, May 17th in a match that will be televised on NBC, Wilbon.
Tony, I can't remember Seminole ever being on television. Am I right about that?
No.
I mean, with a televised
match. No, they're very excited about it.
Look, just to get live sports back and to have that televised, that outstanding. I'm glad to hear it. By the way, I mean, it's been so long since Rory hit balls. You've hit balls since Rory's hit balls. It's amazing. Talk about a vacay.
No, I haven't, because my state is completely closed down, utterly closed down.
Oh, yeah.
Not like Arizona. Happy anniversary, Charles Barkley. On this day, 26 years ago, Barkley scored a career-high 56 points in a playoff game to lead Phoenix to a first-round sweep of the Golden State Warriors. Barkley shot 23 for 31, had 38 points at the half, and also got 14 rebounds. We do this anniversary to remind people, like Draymond Green, what a great player Barkley was. Inch for inch, he may have been the most powerful player ever. The Jordan documentary reminds us what a golden age of basketball the 80s and 90s were. People who are now 30 years old have no idea Barkley as a player. They only know him as a curmudgeonly pundit on TV who is so chatty and likable. It's the same way with many fabled announcers. Very few people remember what a fine football coach John Madden was, or what a good golfer Nick Faldo was. Charles Barkley was as good on the court as he is in the booth.
Charles was great on the court. There's a game 7 he played against Sean Kemp, boys and girls. Maybe you need to YouTube him, where he had like 48 points and 24 rebounds in a game 7 to advance in the playoffs. Charles was a great, 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 great player. And if people are forgetting, that's why I took exception to Isaiah Thomas saying that Kevin Durant and LeBron James would have dominated the 80s and the 90s. No, they wouldn't have. They would have won some, but they weren't going to dominate people like Isaiah, like Charles Barkley. Tony, I'm glad we had this anniversary to remind people how great our friend Chuck was.
Happy trails to the field in the virtual Kentucky Derby. Secretariat proved he was the greatest Derby horse of all time in a star-studded virtual Kentucky Derby. This thing was amazing. It looks totally real. Unlike the simulated NASCAR races where today's drivers are competing, this was the greatest field ever assembled, open only to the 13 horses that won the Triple Crown, from Sir Barton in 1919 to Justify in 2018. The race was designed to replicate these horses in their Kentucky Derby runs. Seattle Slough led for most of the race, with Secretariat and Citation passing Slough in the last 16th. The actual Kentucky Derby was scheduled for this past Saturday and has been postponed until September 5th. The virtual race was to raise money for the fight against coronavirus, and the goal was $2 million. If you think Secretariat would have beaten all these horses close in the Derby, do it again in the Belmont. Secretariat will win by 30 lengths. Shout out Secretariat!
Tony, you know, of course, I paid no attention to this. Let me applaud both the creativity and the charitable nod here. I mean, there's nothing to criticize about it. But, Tony, you know, I rarely get in position to watch the live race, the real race. But I'm going to do that. If it comes off this year, I'm going to gladly sit in front of the TV and watch the Kentucky Derby and everything else I can get my eyes on.
Come over to my house. We will watch the Derby together. We will both have mint juleps. You will not drink yours. Ooh. I will drink yours and mine.
Mint julep, really? Really? Okay, that's awfully
Yeah.
in the spirit of, isn't it? Sage and Kevin, we'll throw it back to you in Bristol.